Welcome back, everybody. It's time once again for another episode of Confident ROI, the one show you can confidently listen to and know that you're going to get a real return on your investment, whether you work in a business, on a business, or with other businesses, from the man who's done all three, Alex Barobiev. Hey, Alex.
Hello, Paul.
Okay, for those listening, we may have cut off the earlier show a little bit. We apologize for that, but we just
Paul
couldn't.
Paul has shamed me for that.
We've shamed you publicly now here, so we can't ever do that again. But other than that, we certainly want to welcome you back. And where are you at today?
I'm stuttering this morning. Just outside Boise, Idaho.
Boise, Idaho. How was beautiful Boise today here?
This thing called fall has started.
Oh, is that when things fall out of the sky like snow and leaves and others? Is that why they call it fall?
The temperature
falls too. Yeah, there you go.
Temperature started to fall. So we're experiencing a season. Not the everlong summer of Southern California.
I hate to admit it, but I actually, it's the only thing I miss growing up as a kid is fall. I don't miss winter. I grew up in the Midwest and Michigan and Minnesota and places like that. Fall was always kind of cool, literally. It was a neat time of year.
Yeah.
There's football.
The big issue of Vogue, which is not as big anymore.
Does that come out in the fall? You got me on that one. Football, I know. Vogue, you lost me. So today we're going to banter and discuss some more issues in the news. You always have the most interesting takes on some of the topics of the day. First of all, we have to say, just as we start off today's show, I know this will date a little bit, but there's a massive hurricane, oddly enough, named after my late great Aunt Florence, who is arriving as we speak in the eastern shores of the United States. So our thoughts and prayers are with everybody out there about to be bashed once again in that never-ending cycle of hurricanes.
It's at least the never-ending cycle of the buildup to the hurricanes. A lot of times it's like a football game. The buildup is so tremendous.
That's true. They're saying this is the storm of the century. Every year we seem to have the storm of the century here, and some of them have been that. Certainly the one in Houston was not as big as it was, but it stalled, and it sat there and flooded all of Houston. That's what they're thinking this will be. It's certainly been downgraded recently, so that's good news. The winds are down to a Category 2 from a 4. But if it stalls and stays offshore, as they predict, again, you could get 40 inches of rain. 40 inches. I can't imagine. That's like the flood. That is a flood. But, I mean, it's like the biblical flood.
Biblical. Yes, yeah. It is biblical.
Yeah, so I don't know. Again, I hope it's overblown. What do you think about that? I mean, do we have to get people so scared? That's the only way. Because too often they just say, the heck with it. And then
that's what gets engagement.
Yeah.
And it is, the media knew it subconsciously. I think the social media knows it inherently now. Mm-hmm. And Elon Musk was talking about it in his infamous interview on the Joe Rogan show.
Oh, I knew you were going to get into that one. That was was that the wildest example of a corporate CEO losing his mind or what? Or is this just more of him just being whoever he wants to be?
He felt safe to be whoever he wants to be. And, you know, we see all those guys that come on and tell you everything's fine or stick to the corporate routine and dance with their elbows in. But he let his hair down. Yeah. And it was pretty interesting. I mean, besides the fact they're drinking whiskey with ice. I don't know if it was scotch, but they mentioned it was whiskey.
Yeah.
And it seemed like there was a lot of ice in there because it was picking up on the sound.
Yeah. And
I think that's sad.
That is sad because you should drink it neat. As an Irish whiskey drinker myself here, you really should drink it neat. But go ahead.
he let his hair down. He might have violated his security clearance if he was, in fact, smoking marijuana. But it was an interesting discussion on AI and how the different things like Facebook and Instagram, how they appeal to parts of our brain. And it's an interesting conversation. There's some points where it gets a little bit indulgent, but if you wondered about AI, it's an interesting conversation on that and how they're looking to essentially have a third layer in your brain where You have your primitive brain, your limbic system that reacts out of fear.
Right.
And that's what the media plays to. You know, this hurricane's going to kill you or kill your friends or flood the East Coast of the United States.
Or do something. We got to get you really, really scared every time. Everything, not just hurricanes, but everything coming at you. This is the biggest election ever, biggest hurricane ever. This is the biggest football game. This is the biggest.
Well, if you told us it wasn't, then you wouldn't pay attention. Because our brain is looking for threats. And if it's not a threat, then you don't have to spend resources on it because your higher brain, your executive brain, prefrontal cortex, its job is to manage the primitive brain, the limbic system, and keep it in check so it doesn't fly off the handles. And the interesting thing that Elon was talking about was this AI would actually be a third layer that would allow you to control that limbic function.
So explain that to me because I don't get it. So you've got this primitive brain, the lizard brain, this ancient brain that's fight or flight. It's always looking for threats and it's always ready to run or defend or fight back, to fight or flight, to fight or run. And then what's the other that's more the evolved brain where you get
then
to
there's
process?
There's a higher brain, also known as the executive brain, but it's right. The prefrontal cortex. And that's your thinking brain. And its job is to put the brakes on the limbic system.
Right. Say, well, hold on.
That takes a lot of energy.
Yes. And then you're saying AI does what? It adds a third layer. I don't get it.
They're looking at essentially uploading additional intelligence capabilities above that.
To your brain as an outside hard drive sitting out there somewhere?
You can actually, instead of going to school and pretending to learn, you just upload additional resources.
I'm a Star Trek fan, so it's Data, Commander Data, and the Android, and he just plugs in and uploads the information here. All right, so then what does that do? You still have to process it, and you still either have to process it through the ancient brain, fight or flight, or the reasonable evolved brain. Or is there a new way to access? Is this just extra hard drive storage, or is this a new way of thinking?
It's a new way. It's additional resources and new way of thinking where how you learn and how you bring in additional resources to use. It's an interesting conversation, and I think it gets it out of trying to read about AI, where AI can be a little bit dry, and he talks about the different aspects of it. How?
Who was the other famous guy that recently said AI is a threat? I've forgotten who. Somebody publicly went out and said, maybe it was Elon Musk, but somebody was saying this is really a threat to society. This is, we got to watch it. It could be like the movies that we've seen with Will Smith and all the others, where the robots take over. We've seen endless movies where the robots become smart and take over.
A lot of people have talked about it, but they want it to be regulated, which seems kind of futile. You're talking to people.
Regulate. We want to shut it down before we start it. We don't want to fire up those robots.
But how do you shut it down? How do you shut down somebody who's innovating? The government is not smart enough to regulate things that are essentially smarter than it.
I don't disagree with that, but I'm simply expressing the fear from my lizard brain that this stuff is scary and it's going to get out of control. So I'm looking for somebody, big brother, some powerful entity to save me and shut it down.
Yeah, it was an interesting part of the interview on the Joe Rogan show is that, can you really stop it? And what's the worst that happens? The universe is... The Earth is eventually going to come to an end somehow.
Oh, that's a pleasant way to start this morning here. The sun's going to burn out. We're all doomed. So drink some more and smoke some more here.
Well, he had a good point. He talks about you want to err on being an optimist and that you can be able to overcome things or be right and be a pessimist. Hmm. Hey, the world is going to end.
Yeah.
And
you don't get any brownie points for that. I tend to be more of a pessimist. I'm old Irish, you know, doom and gloom. If the glass is halfway filled, it's empty, more than full. I'm sorry, I grew up that way. I was raised that way, and I believe that, much to my detriment. And so many times I find myself as a business consultant previous to doing the radio station, as a PR person, I'm always there to try and predict the doom and gloom. And when I'm right, I don't get any brownie points. I don't get a bonus for being right. They almost get angry at me for being right. So I understand why so many people just want to talk happy talk, because you don't get anywhere by, not only does it bring you down, negative, all this kind of stuff we imbued into our culture these days, especially baby boomers, but as a consultant, do you get rewarded if you predict a bad thing? Or do you just get fired for oh, yeah, you were right. Now you just reminded me you were smarter than I am here. And
one of the things in the investment newsletter world that's the secret, not the secret, but when you sell fear,
right,
they sell more newsletters.
Clearly.
And that's appealing to the lower part of our brain, and we're afraid we're going to lose our money. So it depends on what rewarded means.
Well, I'm throwing this out. It wasn't on our script here, but I just have found in my own life, I was a PR consultant for years, and I come at it from a position of looking at the glass half empty. I admit it. So quite often I was there saying, look out, here's a potential landmine, here's something you should be aware of that's developing. And so often when I'd walk in with that information to my client, their first reaction was, tell me something positive. I don't want to hear the negative. And I was like, well, you can't avoid it. If I'm right, there's a real problem here and we need to face it. Not a challenge. No, there's a real problem ahead here and we should look at it. And one, they don't want to. They don't want to hear it. They don't want to face it. And even if it did happen the way I said, they didn't come back to me and say, Paul, we owe you an apology. You were really right. Thank God we have you. You protect us. No, quite often they were like, mad. I mean, I didn't ever find any benefit to being right about a bad prediction. They didn't avoid it, and they didn't reward me for recognizing it.
Well, if you look at it from their brain's perspective, the brain has already got five times as many networks looking for threats. So it's always looking for threats.
Okay.
Looking for.
Mine must have 10. I'm always looking for 10 times more.
Yeah, it has only one-fifth the amount that are looking for opportunities. So the brain's already looking for threats. That's what wakes you up in the middle of the night, and you're worried, you have that anxiety. So you're stoking that, and now that's requiring their brain to think about that and use resources on that.
Okay.
The brain inherently would rather not think about stuff.
No, we all want happy talk. We don't want to fear, right?
But that's why people always ask for solutions. They're asking, hey, you can tell me a problem, but give me a solution, because my brain doesn't really want to process it. It's a lot easier to think about, question a solution, than to just look at a problem.
So maybe you've unlocked something that's plagued me my whole life, and I think continues to plague many giant corporations and government, any big enterprise. I hear it over and over again. I see it over and over again, which is nobody wants to talk truth to power, as they say. Nobody wants to go in and tell the emperor he has no clothes. Nobody wants to go in and tell the truth because, as Jack Nicholson famously said, you can't handle the truth. So quite often we simply bite our tongue and say nothing. It's okay, we're headed towards the Titanic's headed towards the iceberg. I'm just going to shut up, let somebody else tell them.
Well, a lot of times people are behaving in their self-interest, and so it's a risk to speak out. In one of the articles we have coming up in the next edition of the Confident ROI magazine talks about the most effective group. There was a test done on teamwork and how MBAs performed the worst. And it kind of gets to where you were going in terms of talking about things and truth to power, and how an unexpected group of kindergartners were the best performing group.
Really? Mm-hmm. Why? Because they just don't hold back? They tell you exactly what they see?
They did this experiment where you got 20 pieces of spaghetti, a piece of tape, a piece of string, and a couple other things, and a marshmallow. And you had 18 minutes. The teams had 18 minutes to build the highest structure that could support the marshmallow at top. And the kindergartners continually outperformed the MBAs by a significant margin.
You're kidding.
One of the things the MBAs did, first they talk about, okay, what are we going to do? And who's going to be in charge? Who's going to be the CEO? and they would spend a lot of time talking and thinking and finally get to building, and they often waited till the very end to put the marshmallow on top, and then it either held or it fell over, right? So a lot of times they had a zero in terms of height, and they judged groups by the height of their successful structure in inches. But the kindergartners immediately just started testing what would work.
They pick
individually.
It up. My little four-year-old grandson would just pick it up and put it on there.
So they started testing things, and they watch each other. And you weren't going to get thrown out of the group if your idea didn't work. You had spent 15 minutes talking about how great your idea worked. Everyone was trying ideas and learning from each other and seeing what worked and what didn't work. And they consistently outperformed the MBAs. They did better than telecom managers as well. Eventually, when they gave it to architects, they did well because they understood geometrical shapes, self-reinforcing geometrical shapes. So they won, but they had a little advantage there. But
because they knew what would hold. They've studied this. They know that if, yeah,
right. Some technical experience. But when you don't know what works in testing things, and that's where you were talking about people don't want to speak the truth. A lot of times there's one thought, and everyone kind of goes around that because you don't want to question it. But when you can test things on a small basis and in short time frame and not spend time on social status and protection within the group, that really changes things.
Well, I think, again, it's one of the things we see over and over again when they study large organizations. At some point, nobody wants to speak up and get their head chopped off, even if it is serious, because nobody wants to hear negative news, and nobody wants to be the bearer of bad news, and nobody wants them, you know, don't shoot
them. But we're wired for that, Paul. We're wired to survive.
So how do we then...
It's a conscious effort. It's creating an environment. That's one of the articles in the next Confident ROI magazine, which you can sign up for. Mm. It talks about how Google discovered that and how Google unlocked the combination for effective teams.
Mm. Well, I want to hear more about that when we come back, because I think as an organization grows, whether it's the government, whether it's a big corporation, whether it's anything, I think they start to fail as an organization because information doesn't flow freely through it anymore. We'll talk more about that when we come back after we give you some information about some ideas right now. And one of those ideas is very simple. As you can see, we have a man here who thinks with a little different part of his brain. He's got some other ideas that might help you stimulate something in your thinking. His name is Alex Vorobyev, and if you're trying to decide what business tool or concept you should be implementing to move your company forward, you don't know where to start, you don't know how to figure out a process, pretty simple answer, ask Vorobyev. That's right, ask Alex Vorobyev. He's the first business advisor to focus on helping companies and leaders find their unique starting point and the right tool. That's the key, the tool to take them where they want to go. He's an expert on all these different sales processes and sales tools, and he can help you figure out how to implement them into your business. Don't just go buy a box of tools. Find somebody like Alex to show you how to use them. Go to confidentroi.com and enter your question. You can even ask him a free question. Hey, Vorobyev section. Or call him the old-fashioned way, 949-478-0042. You'll be glad that you did. I love saying the old-fashioned way. Like calling is suddenly an old, antiquated technology. Or phones are, you know, ancient. So, hey, Alex, I'm going to ask you that question. We got to continue. Is there a better way to get information to flow? Or as the organization grows and gets more complex, does it automatically stop the information from moving about the system? Because people are afraid and people assist, all the stuff you talked about, all the human behavior that starts limiting, I'm not going to speak up.
So Google wondered, hey, for the company to be successful, its teams had to be successful. And it had a lot of different teams working on different projects because you have technical people and you have marketing people. And it's never just one person.
Right.
And so Google's trying to figure this out.
And their reach is vaster than most corporations. They have a large don't know what percentage, but it seems like a significant one, devoted to just testing stuff, playing with stuff. All sorts. They make enough money that they can just go do R&D and all sorts of crazy ideas that don't even necessarily affect their core business of searching for stuff on the internet. They seem to be open to that and encouraging of this new thinking.
Well, they base their decisions on data and they test a lot.
Right.
There's a reason why the videos that are highly watched is they tested well. People watched them.
Right.
So they're constantly testing things and they wanted to know what was made a successful team.
Right.
And they assumed certain things, maybe how long they worked at Google, maybe a combination of personality types, where they went to school, and they ended up doing a study called Project Aristotle starting in 2012, and they brought in academics and researchers, and they had assumptions, and their people analytic manager said, we were dead wrong.
Really?
Okay. We were dead wrong in what they found. There were five things, but the real gateway was this concept called psychological safety.
Okay.
Which essentially meant people felt comfortable to be themselves and express themselves in a meeting, coming down to not asking a question that might show they don't understand what the group's trying to achieve.
Yes, right.
Asking for help, admitting a failure, that, hey, they could be open, tell it, and the group would, they were safe within that group to do that.
Can I just interject? We had a guest on the other day, David Meltzer, I think that's how he says his name. At one time, he ran one of the largest sports agencies in the world here in Orange County. So he represented major athletes, Warren Moon and quarterbacks like that, lots of famous people. And as the organization grew, he talked about it was hard to get good feedback. And so he came up with what he thought was an innovative idea. And I don't know if he did this every meeting or periodically, he would reward somebody. He'd ask them, give me your biggest blunder this week. Tell me what you screwed up. And then by getting them to admit it and open up, he didn't ridicule them. He didn't berate them. He rewarded them. He actually gave them a big fat bonus, whoever came up with the worst blunder. And I thought, what a creative, not that you're trying to encourage failure, but you're encouraging people to try and to admit and to face up to something that they want to otherwise cover up and hide.
Right. It's easier to hide something. It takes more, you're taking a risk. By admitting something, you could be ostracized from the group.
Could
be
ridiculed, demoted. Laughed, fired, right.
But to learn from it, that's
his
the
point.
Value.
Right.
And now other people don't have to necessarily do the same thing. And that's where Google was finding that similar to the kids with the spaghetti. Hey, try something. Maybe your idea is not going to work. But learning from others and what does work and being able to continue to test to find the right idea instead of spending time on, hey, who's going to be in charge, or, hey, we got to try his idea because he's in charge, or defer.
Right.
Let's try things.
Or who can we blame? I had a client once years ago when I did public relations, and big company, I won't name the company. And there was a guy who was very high up. I think he was like the marketing director or something, and reported straight to the CEO. And I quickly realized his only job was to shoot down every idea, to say no. And that's why they would periodically say, God, it's a good thing we have him here. Boy, he just really saved our ass on that one here. And all he did is block everything. And everybody was scared of him, including the CEO who he reported to. And I thought, what a crazy thing. Why is this a good thing? He's blocking everything. He's bragging about all the ideas he shot down and all the money he saved, when in fact all he's doing is holding them back from innovating and trying new things, in my opinion.
It's the culture. The culture develops where it's the brain would rather be safe. And so it's this, they feel like, oh, this guy's keeping us safe. Well,
yes, right.
He's also keeping you from trying new things.
Right.
Is that company still around?
they struggle. Let's put it that way. So, again, I'm just trying to give some tangible things here. You're a much higher level consultant than I ever was. You work with lots of big companies all over the world, really. I know you're in Mexico a while ago and other crazy places. When you go in, Do they look to you to be the voice of truth? We can't get truth in our own organization. Nobody will tell me the truth, so I have to bring in an outside person to recognize the truth and to bring it to our attention and then hopefully bring solutions? Or is your job, so are you just the teller of truth, or is your job to get them to teach them how to tell the truth?
My number one value is I can provide objective feedback. I can raise the mirror.
Right.
And if you don't like what you see, you can fire me.
Right.
Yeah, I don't. My daughter doesn't have to move schools because of it. But when somebody's saying something that could question the reality of the leader, when they put that up there, when they take that risk, they're putting their families at risk.
Yeah. Right.
You know,
off with their
teenage
head.
Daughters do not like moving schools.
No. So how have you had cases where you walked in, held up the mirror, and they said, we don't like it? I can think of cases where I actually went and told a guy, hired me to do a project, and I kept coming in and telling him stuff he didn't want to hear. And finally, I looked at him, and I said, why am I here? Everything I tell you, you brought me in to tell you the truth, and yet you don't want to hear the truth, or you don't believe the truth. Or you want to argue with me about everything. I'm not here to argue with. I'm not here to make points and prove who's right or wrong. This is what I see. Believe
what
it or
I
not.
See is, yeah, what I see is, I'll give you an example, is you can point out what the issue is, but helping them get around the issue is even better. I was working with a company that has a big, hairy, audacious goal.
Right, and a BHAG.
The owner, a BHAG, yes. And the owner came up with a graphic that he put on the walls of the different stores within the company and how many stores they wanted to get by so many years. It was a great graphic, and it showed all the different steps and points. And I asked the different leaders when I was interviewing them, what do you feel when you look at that? And they said, hey, I'm scared.
Yeah.
We don't know how to do it.
Yeah.
Not just to get to the top where it gets the steepest, but just to get above the foothill.
Hmm.
We're struggling there to get that above the
foothill.
The
CEO with the vision thinks this is inspiring people and leading them, and all it's doing is frightening them.
Well, and the CEOs typically are wired where they like a little more risk. They
yeah.
like and people that are in supporting roles, often they like more security, is a lot more important than esteem. And so you have different drivers for them that are driving their primitive brain. And so by explaining that to him and also explaining, hey, what would take away some of that fear? Hey, developing processes to hire people, to train people. They weren't a process-oriented company. They didn't really know where to start.
Yeah, right.
But by giving them a starting point, like, hey, let's start with process, start with an easy one. That would help them build the skills they need just to go one inch. And that was a way of, hey, there's an issue. They're afraid to say it, but here's what it is. And here's some ways to alleviate that.
So two things that stimulates in my primitive brain here. One is, all right, you get the issue out on the table. The elephant in the room has now been exposed. The emperor has no clothes. We're all going to stand up and take a hard look at this reality. How do you, and hopefully you do it in a way that doesn't create fear and everything else like that. How do you judge what process? You're the magician who walks. You're the master mechanic who walks in with the full set of tools. How do you start with picking and choosing tools? Do you do it based on what will work? Do you do it based on what they can afford? Do you do it based on what you think they can grasp or do? I got a really good tool, but I don't think you know how to use that one yet, so I'm going to just give you a screwdriver right now.
Well, I'm tool agnostic. I don't have one tool that I use. And most of the time, people typically have a default tool.
Yes.
That they use. And so I'm tool agnostic, and I look at where are they right now. And that's why I wrote the book, Transform Your Company.
Right.
And it talks about finding your starting line. And the first one's between the leader's ears. And that is, hey, can they handle the feedback? Could they handle someone telling them, hey, we're scared about your vision?
Right.
We get it, but we're scared.
So if they can't handle it, then that limits, I better take these tools off the table because...
All tools assume the leader has a great relationship with feedback.
Hmm.
They assume that. They assume that if you're not getting the results you want, you're going to make adjustments. It doesn't matter if it's for people, hiring people, or measuring performance, setting goals. They all assume like, okay, if you don't hit it, you're going to try something different.
Right. It seems so logical, and yet I can give you 100 examples where that wasn't true when I went into on an assignment or others I've read about or heard about where they came in, laid out the problem, and nobody wanted to hear the problem.
And so it's easier, it's better for everyone just to say, hey, it's going to stay the way it is till that changes.
Right.
Don't waste your time and money.
Right.
Now, if they have that relationship with feedback or want to develop it, then you can start at the core of the company. Are they on the same page? Is it clear why the company exists and what type of culture it has or wants to have? What's going to be essential for the company to survive?
Let me give you a classic example. I love to put things, tell stories of my own past here. So again, I was a high-level PR person. I was brought into a company, no longer exists. I guess I can name it. It was called Day Runner at the time, in the 80s, 90s. Huge company. Everybody went around the Day Runner before they had these portable smartphones that did it for them electronically. Everybody had a Day Runner, a Day Timer, Franklin, some of these books you carried everything in. And this company had become a leader in the field and grown up real quickly and had a real freewheeling kind of CEOs and ex-hippies running this kind of thing. And they put a lot of stuff into touchy-feely stuff and everybody getting along, but they hadn't really come up with a clear vision of where they were going. So they brought in a huge consultant who had worked for Procter & Gamble. Let's get serious. Let's figure out our marketplace. Let's figure out who we are. And so we brought in all the corporate heads, the head of marketing, the head of sales, the head of engineering, all these things people had done. This is a company that was probably a $50 to $100 million company. And he took them all in a room and asked them one at a time, why are we here? Oh, everybody had an answer. We're going to change the world. I'm going to have personal growth. And he said, not one of them said we're going to make more money or grow this company. Because they had come from this different kind of, you know, feel-good, hippie kind of ethos and everything here. And he was flabbergasted. And I remember when I was hired, I asked everybody just simply, what is it that we make? Nobody could describe the product the same way. It was a life-transforming tool. It was a way to keep track of your contacts. It was this. And I thought, how are you going to go sell this thing to people if you don't even have an agreement on what it is? So there were two great examples from a rapidly growing, seemingly successful company, two different consultants who walked in and were flabbergasted that they weren't even reading, they didn't see the product the same way, and they didn't have a clear vision of where they were going at all, completely. And big surprise, the company eventually failed and fell apart. But you know, I guess I'm floored, and I would dare say, again, the negative part of me, I could go into nearly any company in America and get some of that same experience.
It's the natural tendency is people have their own answers to questions unless it's really clear what those answers are for a company. People are going to make them up. And I've worked in a lot of companies. I've consulted for a lot of companies. It's very rare when answers to important questions like why the company exists, what are the values of the company, what's most important right now, are really clearly defined, and people are engaged on that. That's never gets to the top of the to-do list until it's sometimes too late.
Yeah. So let's come full circle. We'll go back to Elon Musk. Here's a man that's highly praised as a visionary. He's either a madman or a genius. He's been described as both. I think it's just depends on success. If you fail, you're a madman. If you succeed, you're a genius somehow. But do you think, and I don't know anybody at Tesla, I have no idea what's going on inside the company there, but do you think if you were just to walk in, do you think everybody shares that same vision that he has and everybody sees the same thing he sees and everybody's willing to stand up to him and tell him when he's wrong?
I don't know. I don't work for the company. You can see some of the signs of the head of human resources quit and the new accounting officer spent a month there and then turned around and left.
Right.
There's a lot of people leaving, and
That suggests something that maybe we just said the answer. Maybe it's his vision and it's my way or the highway, and he's maybe not quite as much as he would hope. Again, I'm not trying to bash Elon Musk, but
at a minimum, it's great theater. We're living with the current version, the current Times version of Howard Hughes, right?
Yeah, right.
And we'll be able to.
That's a good analogy. Howard Hughes.
Tell our grandkids about, we remember that. You know, they'll be making movies about it 40, 50 years ago now, right? Or maybe not as long.
Right.
But it's at least seeing it in real time. I mean, he's doing things that rival Howard Hughes. Right.
He's acting eccentric. He's he's saying eccentric things, and he's becoming more secretive and less open. All that kind of stuff that Hughes and other eccentric, again, either madmen or geniuses, depending on if they succeed.
Yeah, and that's part of the fun. Someone who is afraid of risk wouldn't do those things. Someone described one of his, he was in the PayPal Mafia, and someone from the PayPal Mafia described him as the guy you go to when you don't care about risk. You know, when risk isn't an issue, you just want to try something big and you don't care. Elon's not afraid to fail.
Obviously not. He's openly talking about how he's going to colonize Mars. He's going to colonize Mars. You know, it's just, this is a guy. I will share one thing. A friend of mine did some work for him on his house, of all things. They installed something there at his house. I forgot what it was. And so he got to go to his, wherever this compound is he lives in, and put some system in place. I can't tell you what, because I think he's not supposed to admit always signs secret agreements and stuff. So just know that he went and did something physically into his house. He added something to his house. And he started talking to the guy, was hanging around, he was very inquisitive. He wanted to know what he was doing. A seemingly simple project that he would normally just delegate to somebody else on his staff. He was really interested in what was being installed into his house here. And so this guy got to go to dinner with him. Elon Musk invited him to dinner and said, hey, I think what you're doing is fascinating. I think everything's fascinating. I want to know more. Come on over. I have a bunch of friends over. And so here he's sitting with this giant magnet. He's like, I just came to do this little project at your house, and now I'm sitting here with you. It'd be sort of like installing, it wasn't, but it'd be sort of like installing an irrigation system, and suddenly you're there at Elon Musk's house, and he's chatting with you how you install the sprinklers. And the takeaway he got was, after spending an evening with him, we all have to think bigger. This guy is just way, way out there. I mean, there is no such thing as a big, hairy, audacious goal for him. That's just everyday thinking.
Thinking is something that doesn't jump up on a lot of people's to-do list, right?
Yeah.
But that's what Warren Buffett does. He reads and thinks. And he has time to do that. Fred Smith, the guy that started FedEx, he would spend 3 hours a day reading. And reading inevitably makes you think. And so, it's a question on whether with Elon, just to finish with Elon, is whether or not he's building a real business that can go on without him.
Yeah.
Or if it's all dependent on him.
Yeah.
And it brought me to this. I just finished reading the Cash Flow Quadrant by Robert Kiyosaki and Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Yeah, sure.
And he has this great, great framework for all types of how to earn, four ways that you can earn a living. And I think it really nails down, even for Elon, that you can either be an employee,
right,
which Elon's not.
Clearly.
You can be self-employed, but the business, you own your job, but the business is dependent on you.
Yeah, if you leave, you're an accountant or you're right.
Accountant, lawyer, doctor,
right,
consultant. Or you can be a business owner, but a business owner of a true business that, in their definition, is you could leave for a year and the business could be better off.
Exactly.
Or you can be an investor. And it's kind of a question with Elon and his, especially with Tesla, is it dependent on him?
Yeah.
In that framework, and so many people, what I saw of this framework was, one, it's really something to show kids as they're going through their schooling, because everything's kind of focused on being an employee or being self-employed, being
right,
a doctor, lawyer. or are you trying to build a business that isn't dependent on your efforts?
Well, and another, I know we got to take a break in a second, but the other one that comes to mind is how many family businesses survive past the third generation? Very, very few. It's hard to survive into the second generation. So you build a giant company, corporation, entity, something, and you pass it on to your
kids. Yeah, there's a great story in the book. It's a parable, but this father has this business that's totally dependent on him, and he has to bring his sons into it just to keep his head above water. And it's just backbreaking work, and they're dying. And he tells him, hurry off to college and come back, because this is all yours.
Yeah.
And the kids never came back.
Yeah.
If it's not something that's sustainable, it's very difficult to come in there and just plug dysfunction is not appealing, especially when they know the downside of the dysfunction.
Yeah. Well, on that down note, we're going to take a quick break and see if we can pick people back up again, and then we'll come back and chat on a couple other things in the news and what's coming up in our freewheeling discussion today here in our Ask Verovio section here. I got lots of ask them right after this. And, of course, we always take a short break to remind you that this isn't just a once-in-a-while conversation. You can get a real magazine to support this. Yes, you can confidently read something. We're talking about reading and stimulating your brain. Don't just listen. Read something once in a while. And why not read Confident ROI Magazine? There's a new one coming out. I'm going to let Alex, when we come back, give you some takeaways and hints. But the last one certainly featured a lot of interesting articles like How to Unleash Your Inner Supercomputer. That's what Alex writes a lot about, how to take the old software and upgrade it. Don't just be stuck with your old lizard brain, how to turn it into a faster supercomputer. Lots of stories like that, lots of experts like Vern Harnish and others. It's available right now. Confident ROI Magazine. We're so confident it'll help you. It's free. That's right. It's free. You can subscribe, download it, get it. You can even get a real copy and put it in your hands if you want. Confident ROI. Check it out. So having teed you up, what's in the next issue?
Going to press soon. It's as I looked at the articles I did, I realized they all kind of had a theme, and I really didn't mean to or didn't.
It was unconscious.
It wasn't conscious. It was
right.
Subconscious. And we talked about how much goes on below the conscious level of thought. And it's about the finding the combination for effective teams.
Mm-hmm.
And I think why I wrote in my letter from the editor, as growing up as an only child, I didn't really have a lot of experience working with other people.
You and me both. I'm an only child, too.
Yeah. And so we, just the whole concept of stop touching me and having to work out differences.
That always quit looking at me. Why is he looking at me? Yeah.
Stop touching me. Mom. I didn't have that. I was used to working on my own. And working on a team is always been something that's kind of been interesting to me because I wasn't inherently good at it.
Yeah, right.
And so now there's research on what works. We were talking about what Google's discovered. And I also did a interview with a company called Motivo Engineering, does some really cool stuff. And they do the impossible on a short time frame. So they basically bring prototypes to life for big companies in a fraction of the time they do it for themselves. So it talks about how one of their clients needed a fully functional premium class airline seat on the floor of a trade show within 4 months.
Wow.
And that would typically take 2 years. And they were right at the midst of this historic upgrade cycle with airline customers. And so it was now or never. And their rule is, we don't say it's impossible. That's part of their ethos. They want to figure out, understand where the client's coming from and try things, keep coming back to the client, see if they're on target, but to figure out that a methodology for doing this, and they're very successful at it, but that's led to more and more demand, and
sure.
So they have to keep hiring, but it's a challenging job, and the CEO described it, he said, look, it's For the right person, it's a dream job.
Hmm.
For the wrong person, it doesn't fit. It's a nightmare.
Yeah, because you're asked to do the. They're putting it out in the universe to their customers, to themselves. We can do the impossible. The only other time I worked in the entertainment industry, as we've talked about a few times before, as a publicist for big celebrities and films and movies and stuff and rock stars. And I worked with the police. I worked with David Lee Roth. I worked with some other crazy people. And one of the things, that's the only business I've ever been in. When I left that, I was a PR for regular corporations and stuff. I have never seen a business, it sounds exactly like what you're talking about. In the entertainment business, there is there's no impossible. When the director comes in and says, I want 500 things to fall out of the sky and I want them to be right here, right now, you say, yes, sir, and you figure out how to, and everybody goes in the room, they say, that's impossible. Can't possibly do that. Well, we got 2 hours to figure it out. And they're constantly doing the impossible as they make movies, as they make TV shows and all this stuff. And it's an exhilarating but a frightening environment to work in because, now, yes, they have unlimited budgets in many cases and, you know, they can throw as much money as they want at it, but in 10 minutes, I want 200 SEALs jumping out of a airplane and landing right here, right now. And well, how do you do it?
It's entertainment. And entertainment a lot of times is something you haven't seen before.
Yeah, right.
It's something that's exhilarating. So if they were doing the same thing over and over again, it really wouldn't be entertainment.
Yeah, right. They're always challenging. Drag 500 cameras up to the top of this mountain, shoot something that nobody thinks is possible. And we're going to do it in the middle of a snowstorm. And I just figure it out.
But that's something that's affecting more and more industries now because they got to connect with customers on YouTube and
yes.
Twitter and Facebook. And how do you do that? You have to entertain. That has to be novel. It has to be something they haven't thought of before.
New, bigger, better, fancier, more exciting. It's got to be, you got to keep raising the bar to what you're doing, what's possible, where you're going.
Elon used this term called limbic resonance in the term. And it's he was talking about how Instagram really creates in a short, because of the pictures, they transmit so much that they could create a real connection between different people's limbic systems. And that's something that we're all competing on now. That's the Facebook thing where people are putting their lives on there and making their lives better than what they are.
Right.
And it's not a reality. And it does that Hollywood kind of, a lot of times there's the image that was out in public and then there was what was behind the camera, right?
Right.
Didn't always measure up. And that's a bigger portion of the world is trying to entertain the world now.
Interesting. Okay. So all this and more we can read about in the upcoming issue of Confident ROI magazine, which comes out when?
It's going to press now, but if you go to confidentroi.com, you can sign up for a print, digital, or audio version. So you get a copy in your hand.
Whatever entertains you. Right.
It'll be the fall issue.
Okay. Well, again, we're back to that fall. You're feeling the fall up north, and we're going to, the new issue's ready to fall into our lap here. So anything else before we fall apart here today and dissolve this free-ranging? It's always fascinating because your brain is sort of like what you're discussing. I say something, and you're off in four different directions than I hadn't thought about, with 14 different perspectives and thoughts to bring to it. That'd be very interesting to work with you on a project, because you don't just come in and say, okay, you know, let's get down to basics and let's do this. You seem to bring a lot of this higher-level learning and this overall perspective of how does your brain work into everything that you do.
Well, I found that a lot is dependent on the brain. And mine wasn't.
Duh! You think, but no, I've never heard anybody say that.
Wired that well. It had some defects, as some people around me know. So I've been working to try to upgrade my software, and my wife's been very patient with me.
As you keep rebooting and rebooting, she says, "No. We got to fix that patch. We got to put something else in there."
I did see an interesting article, Paul. I thought you might be interested in. I always like articles when things are. People look at things in a different way.
Yeah.
But,
me too.
The,
yeah.
The English pub is disappearing.
You know, you put that in there, and I jumped over. You had a list of things we could talk about here today, and I thought, well, I don't, are we going to fit that in? I mean, I find that fascinating, but and I'll just stop a second here because people know, again, that one of my other passions is Irish whiskey, and I've owned and operated several Irish pubs through the years as a little side fund business. And I always modeled my pubs after the original English and Irish pubs, which were cheers. Everybody knew your name. Everybody was glad you came. It was the gathering place. It was the place where the tribe, the community, the town came together.
They're playing to your limbic system. You felt good. Mm-hmm. You felt safe. Mm-hmm. There was an underlying brain component there. Mm-hmm. But
tribal, communal, friendly, warm, inviting, you know.
Property developers have found a better use for the English pub.
Hard to believe that. What could be better than a little hole-in-the-wall joint where it brings everybody together?
How about a 22 million pound
luxury
apartment,
home?
A luxury apartment. I think they call them apartments there. I don't think they call them condominiums. But they found that the English pub often has a good location.
Oh, of course. Central. You can't be out in the middle of nowhere. It's got to be easy to get
there. The downstairs makes a great family room and kitchen, great room. And it has a kitchen. It has an upstairs. And they found that converting these into luxury homes is a better use. And the English are a little bit outraged by this.
I would be, because it kills the character of the England. Like Ireland is filled with little villages, and those villages need, they don't have a common area except for the pub. That's where everybody comes together and hangs out, rich or poor. That's the unique thing about a pub. You see the rich guy in town sitting at the same stool with the poorest worker in town. It's very egalitarian. It's very equal. You're all equal sitting in the pub.
They can't have pubs and build new ones. Just saying that if it's a it has to economically justify itself.
Well,
maybe there's too many pubs.
Maybe, but I hate that notion that somebody comes along and says, you know, for my profitability, I'm going to turn something that's a town asset into something only one person's going to share. I hate that idea. It breaks down communication. It breaks down these things. I get it. It's all about money. And if they can find a better, make more money out of that prime location, I guess they will. But I think it's a shame. I think they lose something. The community loses something in the long run.
Or maybe gain sobriety.
And is that a good thing in today's world? Well, all this and more to be discussed and debated next time as we continue our free-ranging discussion. What are we doing next week? Any previews of what's coming up?
We got some great shows we've recorded regarding scaling up and EOS, and got a great story from an immigrant coming to America with $28 in his pocket.
Wow, I love those stories. That is the American dream. That's the American
amazing
myth.
Amazing spirit, and not only was successful in one industry, but multiple industries. So got some great shows in the can, and more to come.
Okay, more to come. Well, you've been tuned to the one show that each and every week allows you to confidently open up your mind, download some data, and see if you can't pick up an idea or two that'll stimulate something new in your limbic brain here. It's Confident, ROI.